Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. In August alone, close to 4.3 million Americans uttered those magic words, "I quit," and perhaps walked out the door. The quit rate, as it's known, is at the highest it's been since records began to be kept in 2000. It's happening all up and down the range of jobs. This isn't just a white-collar phenomenon. The simplest explanation: the job market is hot, but the jobs themselves are not. We'll talk with experts about this phenomenon in the labor market and listen to some of your stories about quitting. And then we'll check in with a key member of Berkeley's Latter-day Saints about just that, being a Latter-day Saint in Berkeley. That's all next on Forum after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. In March of 2020, few people anticipated that now, a year and a half later, we'd have a booming economy in which the big problem is that businesses cannot find enough workers at the pay rates and working conditions that they had before. That's given many types of workers more leverage in their workplaces because they can just quit. And with 10 million job openings in the United States, it turns out millions of people are quitting their jobs each month in the cleverly named Great Resignation. But not every kind of worker is in the same position. So if you've recently quit a job, call us to share why. Tell us how it's going. Or if you run a company and you're having trouble retaining workers, what are you changing up in order to keep people around? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. We hope to hear from a bunch of you in different kinds of situations. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook as usual. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email your story to forum@kqed.org. Joining us to talk about quitting and the economy people are quitting into, we have Enrique Lopez Lira. He directs the low-wage work program at the UC Berkeley Labor Center. Welcome to the show, Enrique.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We also have Carla Miller, the work advice columnist for the Washington Post. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
And finally, we have Jason Wingard, the president of Temple University. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alexis. Great to be here.
President Wingard, let's start with you. Just the basics. Why is this happening now?
Well, it's a really interesting topic, Alexis, and we're seeing what has already started through the beginning of the pandemic, and it's been accelerated now. We see a group of millennials and Gen Zers, and by the way, they're going to be 75 to 80% of the workforce in the next couple of years, so they do, in fact, have the power in this new market economy. But what they have seen through their lived experience is their parents, Generation X, people like me, and baby boomers who have worked 80-hour work weeks. They have committed everything to the job. They have not had balance. They have not made as much money as they wanted to make. And so they've seen their lives not be the balance that they want from personal to professional, and they don't want that for themselves. They want to have a balanced life. They want to be able to dictate how and when they work, how and when they are evaluated, and they now have the power to be able to enforce that, and employers have to make the decision. Do we want to give them that right to dictate how we run our businesses, or do we not? And those who are choosing not to adhere to what millennials and Gen Zers want, they're going to be losing in the new workplace of the future.
Enrique Lopez Lira, are we seeing this up and down the pay scale? Are low-wage workers also experiencing this kind of new power within their workplaces?
Well, what we're seeing from low-wage workers is that, at least in the numbers from July and August, is that we're still in the middle of a pandemic. Many folks forget that. And a lot of the quits rates that we saw really had to do with the Delta variant. And a lot of these low-wage workers are in jobs where they have to be in face-to-face contact with other workers and with customers, and there's no way for them to work remotely. And because these jobs don't typically offer health benefits or paid sick leave and so forth. There's a real concern still in many of these workers that they might get the virus and bring it home to their families and their unvaccinated young children and elderly parents and so forth. And so they are quitting, maybe not for the same reasons as some of the professional millennials, but some real concerns from the virus that we're still having to deal with.
Yeah. Kyla Miller, work advice columnist for The Washington Post. Seems like Jason Wingard described kind of like the pull attractions of a sort of new kind of workplace and newly empowered workers, particularly professional class workers. And Enrique kind of described the push of like a lot of these jobs are just terrible and they are have been made more terrible by the conditions of the pandemic. Is that what you're hearing from people in your post as the columnist there at The Washington Post?
Yes, I'm actually happy to say that everybody is right. The pull and the push are happening, and I'm hearing about both of them. A couple weeks ago, I first wrote about the Great Resignation, and I just put the question out there: Are you experiencing this? Have you quit a job because of the pandemic, or has it forced you to rethink your career? And I have just been flooded with responses from people at all income levels, in all industries, from frontline workers in healthcare and food service to people who are in more office jobs behind the scenes, who aren't on the front lines but are still feeling the stress from the pandemic in tech, in HR, in higher academia even. So it's all ages, and there are some who are young workers who are feeling the pressure, and then there are some workers near the end of their careers who were intending to retire eventually, just not this soon, but they've decided to go ahead and take early retirement because the conditions are so bad in their offices.
Yeah. We're talking about the high quit rate, what it means for workers and for the economy, with Kyla Miller, work advice columnist for The Washington Post, Enrique Lopez Lira, who directs the low-wage work program at UC Berkeley Labor Center, and Jason Wingard, president of Temple University. And we want to hear from you. If you've recently quit a job, call us to share why. Tell us how it's going. And we also kind of want to hear, did the pandemic change your relationship to work in some fundamental way? The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Get in touch on Twitter and Facebook at KQED Forum and the emails forum@kqed.org. Let's welcome Virgil from San Francisco into the conversation.
Hi, thank you for having me. I quit my job about a month ago. I was working at a dispensary at the Wharf here in San Francisco, and the starting wage was only $17 an hour, which is not a lot of money here in San Francisco to get by. And also, it was very poor management, and they had all recently gotten COVID because they weren't wearing masks in the back of the store. And I just know that my value is more than that. I also had recently come back from living in Germany, where I had spent a lot of money and time learning the language there so that I could go to one of the trade schools there, which are free. You just have to know German. I couldn't get the visa to stay there, but I wish we had those kinds of programs in the U.S. where the school and carpentry, nursing, welding, baking, those are all considered trade schools. And they're all 3 years. They're free. The government pays you to work 20 hours a week. They give you a place to live and food to eat. And that's what every person on this earth deserves, but also Americans.
Wow. Virgil, what are you going to do now, at least, you know, till you can figure out how to go back to Germany?
Well, I'm just kind of taking it day by day. I have some savings, fortunately, and I already have a degree. In less than 2 years, I'll graduate from CCSF as a dental assistant, which I'm very fortunate that I found a path that is a great fit for me. But I wanted to do carpentry, which they won't give you loans for that in America. You have to pay out of pocket, and it's very expensive. But that was the program I was looking at doing in Germany.
That's really interesting. Thank you so much, Virgil, just to hear your story. And, you know, Enrique, I was wondering, you know, we heard a lot in the early part of the pandemic about how the lack of available daycare and other kinds of childcare, those burdens were falling to women and women were dropping out of the workforce. Is that still something that we're seeing happen now?
Yes. In fact, the jobs report that came out for September showed that women, again, were exiting the workforce. And we still have the national level over a million women who are not in the labor market yet. Because there's still a pandemic and the Delta variant, there's a lot of daycare places who have not fully reopened. Some of the numbers on the quit numbers we saw for August also were before school started, and there was a lot of uncertainty about whether schools were going to open in person or, or not. And all of those uncertainties really fall primarily on women. And when you break it down by race, Black and Hispanic women tend to provide an even bigger share of the care. And so definitely care is a very big concern still. And the pandemic, if nothing else, has really shed a light on the care crisis that we have in this country.
Yeah. Jason Wingard, when we're looking at these, the stratification of the job market now, do you think that white-collar workers are experiencing something fundamentally different from people lower on the wage scale?
Yeah, it's interesting, Alexis. I do think that that is the case. There are a lot of different challenges that are being faced by workers during this pandemic and more recently. But white-collar workers in particular have had, in general, more flexibility with when and where they can work. So the hybrid workforce has reached white collar workers more readily than, say, the service economy where that needs to be on the ground doing trucking, doing moving and shipping and logistics. And so those white collar workers are now demanding that the hybrid workforce, being able to work from home, being able to log into Zoom and to conduct meetings in that way, managing virtually, that that maintains. And so you see companies like Twitter and Google choosing to focus more on maintaining that type of work environment for those white collar workers who expect it and who have the upper hand in this economy, because we need these workers. There's a talent shortage, there's a talent war. And so these employers now have to figure out, what can I do to make sure I maintain these workers? As opposed to the blue collar workers, where that work on the ground is more readily available. And so the worker, the employers don't have to cater to those workers as much. So the workers who are in the white collar roles, they have more power, that dynamic has shifted. And so employers are having to say, what is it that you want so that we can keep you, we can retain you, and that we can give you what you need so that you can help make us competitive. And that's really an important factor now. And with that power, this workforce is starting to ask themselves that question. Where do I want to work? How do I want to work? How do I want you to invest in me so that you can retain my talent to make your company better?
Yeah. We're talking about the high quit rate and what it means for workers and for the economy with Jason Wingard, president of Temple University, Carla Miller, work advice columnist for The Washington Post, and Enrique Lopez Lira, who directs the low-wage work program at the UC Berkeley Labor Center. And again, we do want to hear from you. If you've recently quit a job, call us and share why, 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more Forum after the break. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about workers quitting, what it means for the economy. Carla Miller, work advice columnist for The Washington Post. Jason Wingard, president of Temple University, also writes for Forbes. And Enrique Lopez Lira, who directs the low-wage work program at UC Berkeley's Labor Center. I want to welcome Jay from Santa Rosa into the conversation.
Hi there. Yeah, I quit a food industry job after doing barista work for a lot of years because the main reason being I didn't want to be the police of masks and keeping myself and my coworkers safe. And I'm doing courier work now. And so I have the option to cancel orders if I feel unsafe in a situation. So that has been my experience with this. And then also my mom has worked in preschool for years and years, and she wants to get out but is pretty much trapped because there's such a high need for preschool teachers right now.
And is she able to get higher wages in that work, or has she just kind of been stuck with the job that she's had and the wages she's had in the past?
Right. She definitely has community ties to her job, but also the wage, she couldn't go over to just Head Start or something and make the same wages. She's in a more privatized preschool.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, thank you for that, Jay. You know, Carla, we were talking a lot about the service industry and having to sort of police the behaviors of the pandemic. Is that something you've heard from workers that it's just sort of like an added burden that makes a bad job untenable?
I haven't heard as much from people in food industry having to mask police, but I have heard of conflicts over masks in workplaces, all kinds of workplaces. Mm. I actually have a cousin who was a bartender and would frequently get customers asking her to take her mask off when she talked to them and that sort of thing. And she didn't feel safe, but fortunately she had management who would back her up and say, no, we don't allow that. Our personnel have to keep their masks on. So there's that concern. And in the early stages of the pandemic, I did get a lot of questions from people in offices saying, nobody in my office will wear masks, or I'm interviewing for a job where I had to ask them to put a mask on to talk to me. And, you know, people not feeling comfortable in those kinds of environments. And, you know, my take was, if they're not wearing a mask when they first meet you, you're not going to have much luck convincing them to start doing it after they hire you. So people are sort of gravitating to jobs that, you know, have the kinds of policies that match their own risk tolerance and their own comfort.
Yeah, you know, Carla, that does seem really interesting. You know, we had over the last, you know, half century, we've had people sort themselves geographically such that, you know, we're politically in enclaves. Now it seems like the same thing is actually happening in the workplace, that people's sort of values, risk tolerances and politics are also kind of sorting them into different kinds of companies.
It is. I'm hearing, you know, ever since we had the vaccine mandate, you know, get a vaccine, or, you know, employers over a certain size have to ensure that their employees are vaccinated or take, you know, have a negative COVID test. Some people are leaving their jobs over that, either because they don't want to get the vaccine, and so they want to go work for some place that doesn't have to follow those rules, or people who want to work in a vaccinated workplace, and so they're going to leave their anti-vaccine jobs and go somewhere where they feel safer and where they feel among people who share their views.
Mm-hmm. Listener Sam asks, what's the role of unions in this new great resignation? Enrique?
Well, I think we're seeing that the public approval of unions is at an all-time high. And I think the pandemic has opened the eyes of many out there who now understand that unions not just benefit covered employees, but non-covered employees as well. Where there's unions, the pay tends to be better, the quality of the job tends to be better, and that those benefits extend to non-members of the union as well. So from our perspective in the low wage work program, we want to improve the quality of jobs and the labor standards that workers have to work under. And I believe unions are, you know, countervailing force to some of the you know, power of larger corporations that we've seen over the past few years.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, Enrique, because, you know, you're trying to organize people in the workplace to, you know, improve conditions within that place. And then if people are leaving or just like quitting, rather than, it's almost like you're providing kind of a pressure release rather than having the pressure go towards changing the work conditions.
Yeah, I mean, the sad reality is that it's still very difficult to organize workers, and some of the policies in particular states have made it very difficult for workers to organize both in the private and the public sector. And you know, we saw some of that in Wisconsin a few years ago. And so, there's policies that have been proposed to make it easier and for workers to unionize and engage in collective bargaining. The problem is they haven't been enacted yet, and there's still a question of whether they will ever be enacted, but the PRO Act at the federal level does exactly that. It makes it easier for workers to organize in the workplace and prevent companies from thwarting those efforts to organize by workers.
Alexis, I'm Alexis. I'd like to. Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Alexis, this is Jason Wingard. I'd just like to add to what Enrique was saying. I completely agree. The labor unions have never been as attractive as they are now, but the gig economy is also strengthening in this market. The gig economy meaning contract workers. So we see a lot of workers who are exiting their jobs. They're quitting, as you said earlier, but they are going to work for themselves. So some are not working anywhere. I just wrote an article in Forbes a couple of weeks ago that talked about the great resignation. And we see that some people are quitting and they're just figuring out what they're going to do and they're not working anywhere, as some of our callers have suggested. But others are engaging in the gig economy. They're figuring out, how can I get skills and competencies from an educational provider, whether that's an alternative provider or whether that's a college or university like Temple University. And they are skilling themselves with what they think the workers need right now. And then they are working for themselves on a contract basis to do the work for as long as that project or that initiative lasts. And then they go back out of the market and then they come back in again. So inside of companies, we see the unions having a greater influence on the workforce, but then we also see people quitting the job market, going into the gig economy, and then picking and choosing where they want to work and how they want to work by fortifying themselves with the skills that the marketplace is looking for right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. We're talking about the high quit rate and what it means for workers and for the economy with Jason Wingard, president of Temple University, also a professor in this realm of the world, Carla Miller, work advice columnist for The Washington Post, and Enrique Lopez Lira, who directs the low-wage work program at UC Berkeley Labor Center. Did the pandemic fundamentally change your relationship to work, maybe leading you to quit? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Let's welcome Pamela from San Jose into the conversation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I am a tech worker and I had a great job as a recruiter, and we are in very high demand because it's so hard to find people. My story is a little bit different from all these tech workers that love working remotely, love working from home, have moved away from the Silicon Valley and other expensive areas. My situation is a little bit different in that I was finding it very, very difficult to work from home. Distracted, hard to focus, hard to prioritize things, and really, honestly, it was a mess. And it was creating so much stress that I couldn't sleep, and I thought, I've got to figure this out. I was afraid to tell my company, but eventually I did, you know, say, I'm having a really hard time concentrating, keeping focused. I don't know. I didn't tell them this part, but I don't know if it's my age. I don't know if it's pandemic-related stress, crazy priorities.
To be fair, there was a lot going on last year, you know?
Yes, yeah. All of those things. And so I decided to quit so that I could figure it out. I took the summer off, thought, okay, let me focus on just personal things and what I want to be doing. And so I took the summer off, drove my boys around to have fun, you know, for the summer, and it was great. I am working again, though, but I'm working from home still, so I'm still trying to figure that out.
And you took the same kind of job roughly then?
I did. I'm still doing a similar job, still working from home, just trying really hard to stay more focused. I need some other tools to do that, though, because at home there are still so many distractions, but I'm figuring it out.
Yeah. Carla Miller, do you hear this? I mean, it does feel like there's a big... Yeah, yeah.
First of all, Pamela, let me reassure you, you are not alone. For all that we've been saying, hey, remote work is great. People are so much more productive. They're doing a great job with it. Everybody's wired differently. And there are, you know, I actually wrote a column a while back responding about a person who was having trouble with the remote work. Mm-hmm. He just, you know, having to communicate through email exclusively and through video meetings, it just wasn't, it wasn't what he was comfortable with. He had a hard time sort of communicating and absorbing ideas. For a lot of people, being on a Zoom call is stressful because you're thinking about how you look and how you sound, and it's kind of hard to adapt to that and then think about the content of what you're actually saying or what's happening in meetings. So this is not a flaw in you. This is not an age thing. People are just, and some people, okay, granted, some people thrived during the pandemic working remotely. They found it was better. For them, it reduced distractions, and they were better able to focus and just sort of put their heads down and plow through their work. But again, not everybody worked better in those conditions. And I think what this pandemic has done, if there's any silver lining, it's that it has forced us to think about how we work best and to advocate more for ourselves and say, you know, this situation works for me. I'd like to keep doing this. Or this doesn't work for me. I want to go back to doing it the other way. And hoping that your management will listen and be willing to adapt and accommodate to individual workers' needs instead of trying to impose a one-size-fits-all solution.
Thank you for that story, Pamela, and thank you for that, Carla. You know, my hot tip for Zoom meetings is you can turn off the self-view. You can turn off the video of looking at yourself. No one is meant to stare at themselves for as many hours a day as we stare at ourselves in Zoom meetings. Let's bring in Lynn from Concord. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
Yeah, what's your story?
So I was an emergency room nurse for 12 years. Did travel nursing, worked all over the United States. And I've been kind of trying to get out of nursing, ER nursing for a while. It's very, very stressful. It's not something that I was planning on doing forever. And the pandemic just kind of pushed me over the edge, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic, going to work really scared for my life, watching people die. It was really scary. And then I think the tipping point for me was when the vaccines, you know, everybody's vaccinated, and then people who had made a conscious decision to be unvaccinated would still come, and they would get sick, obviously, and they would be really sick, and they would take up beds in the emergency department and then the hospital. And it was very frustrating for me to have compassion for people that were making the choice to be unvaccinated, which is fine. That's your choice, but then still coming and wanting our help when they were sick. And that was just really, really difficult for me to reconcile. And it got harder and harder to go to work every day. And compassion fatigue was something that's really, really, it's a real thing. Burnout was happening. It's still happening. And what I've actually noticed a lot of nurses now, because there's nursing shortages all over, because this is obviously happening, we're leaving en masse. And it's frustrating for a lot of my coworkers who are still there because they're paying travel nurses, you know, thousands of dollars to come and work in these hospitals, and they're not really incentivizing the nurses that are staying. And that's really frustrating for a lot of my coworker, my old coworkers.
Yeah. Well, Lynn, I hope you find something that's a little bit less stressful. I feel like you deserve a break.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I actually have a couple of opportunities opening up that are I'm really excited about, work because I still do. I love patient care. I love treating people. But I'm working more on the preventative side of things now, which I think is a little bit better for me.
Yeah. That's great.
So thank you.
Well, thanks for sharing your story, Lynn. Mike, listener, has a comment here for once Enrique to answer. I've heard complaints from those of a conservative bent that the difficulty of hiring is due to the government checks everyone got. How much is that really a factor? Could we talk about that, Enrique?
Sure. I think that the latest jobs report for September and the openings and turnover report for August show that the narrative about unemployment or extended unemployment benefits keeping people from the labor market is false. Some economists have done some robust work. First, they did it when the CARES Act money increased those benefits, and then more recently to look at some of the additional extended benefits and found that there really was no cause and effect there. And if you look at the jobs report from states that ended those unemployment benefits early, because of that narrative, there was no bump in employment for those states. So
you had a nice natural experiment there and didn't see people rushing back to work even after the unemployment benefits ended.
Correct. And so what that means is that it really did more harm to those workers who are still struggling. Taking those benefits away from workers when they needed the most out of some false narrative that might be politically motivated really is terrible policy and really hurtful to workers who will continue to struggle right now in the middle of this pandemic.
Let's get to one more caller, Levi from Los Gatos. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So Levi, you're a hiring manager, right? You're on the other side of this.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I manage a bike shop that's a chain in the Bay Area, and we are currently seeing a huge shortage in applicants across nearly every area of the Bay. In both sides of our business, we offer retail sales and tech services, mechanics in our shop, and both are severely lacking in new applicants.
So interesting. And so there's basically like a mismatch between what you need and the people who are showing up.
Yeah, absolutely. We've begun offering some really creative incentives for new hires over the past year. In the first year of COVID, to retain employees, there was additional hazard pay offered, and then to entice our existing employees to recruit new members, hiring bonuses for referring. Friends or other people in the industry. And then of course, a really creative slate of other benefits that we offer our employees, like getting paid to ride since we are a bike shop, big discounts on gear and things like that, common in other retail fields. But then other things like bringing your dog to work and some other fun things like that. And yet we're still seeing it. I think we're hearing a lot that people just want to get paid more.
Yeah. Yeah. Jason Wingard, want to go to you with this with Levi's story, which is basically the extension of a lot of these benefits we kind of associated with, high-end tech work kind of filtering into retail.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the questioners who have come on to the call of this show recently have expressed all the issues that we're facing right now. People are exiting the workplace because of issues such as mental health. So they're overwhelmed, they're stressed, they can't take the changing dynamic of how and where they're trying to work. Public health-wise, they're afraid of getting sick, the mask mandate and all those expectations of people wearing it or not wearing it. Higher education, so we see at Temple University, a lot of people are saying, I'm just gonna start going to school now, I'm gonna fortify my resume and my background and my skill set. Other people feel like they're not making enough money. So all these issues are contributing to this exit. People are not staying in the workforce because of all these issues. And then you have a bike shop owner, such as our caller, who's saying, I can't find the talent that I need to be able to do the work. And it's for all of these different reasons. And the only way you can attract these workers is by offering the benefits we've been talking about, the cultural benefits, the other things.
Gonna have to leave it there. We've been talking about the high quit rate with Jason Wingard, president of Temple University, Carla Miller with the Washington Post, and Enrique Lopez Lira. He directs the low wage work program at UC Berkeley. Stay tuned.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.